that was a takeaway that I had hoped we would hear, and I thought the president delivered.
Alaska's senators respond to the president's more conciliatory tone from last night's address. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, from hate to community love, a bomb threat at a Alaska Jewish center prompts widespread support for the group.
I mean, there was an outpour of love and kindness.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Alaska's congressional delegation liked the restrained tone of the address President Trump made to Congress last night. The president named several issues that he wants Republicans and Democrats to agree on.
To invest in women's health and to promote clean air and clean water and to rebuild our military and our infrastructure.
That brief reference was the only discussion of the environment. Trump did not say much about energy either, although he did say he's working to advance the Keystone and Dakota Access pipelines. He spoke several times about reducing federal regulations, or as he called it,
job-crushing regulations.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan says he heard a lot he liked in Trump's speech and nothing he disagreed with. Sullivan says he especially liked the president's focus on unity and the economy.
The idea of reigniting the American economic engine, talking about, you know, hey, we are in kind of a hole here. He laid out some of the numbers, but then he laid out the vision of how we would do that. Rolling back regulations, which he focused on a lot, infrastructure.
Trump called on Congress to pass an education bill that funds school choice to help disadvantaged kids. Sullivan favors school choice, too, but the senator says Congress passed a major education bill just last year and is unlikely to pass another. Senator Lisa Murkowski didn't like Trump's plug for school choice. She and other opponents of diverting money to private schools say it could erode the quality of public schools. Murkowski, though, praised the president's optimistic tone and his stated willingness to work together.
That was a takeaway that I had hoped we would hear, and I thought the president delivered.
All three members of the congressional delegation were in the House chamber. Alaska Congressman Don Young remained seated through more than 30 standing ovations, although he clapped and sometimes cheered. A spokesman said Young told him he stood when he felt moved to, not just because everyone else was. Young, in a videotaped statement, said he agreed with Trump on the need for fewer regulations and more military spending, but he thought the address ran a bit too long. The White House wants to eliminate Environmental Protection Agency funds for water projects in Alaska Native villages. That's according to a story in the Washington Post today. It says the Trump administration's plans for the EPA budget also include trimming grants to states by 30% and eliminating climate change initiatives. Alaska receives about $78 million a year in grants and contracts from the EPA, a substantial portion through the Alaska Native Villages Water Program. The money helps villages install new water and wastewater systems, so fewer communities have to rely on unsafe drinking water and honey buckets. The money also helps villages improve existing systems. The EPA cuts are reportedly part of a $54 billion reduction in domestic programs the White House wants to offset an increase in military spending. The president's budget isn't final yet or public.
First, we have to get to the real facts, and right now we're just operating off of some suggestions.
Senator Lisa Murkowski chairs the appropriations subcommittee that drafts the spending bill for the EPA.
I will obviously look to maintain those areas where Alaskans and people around the country feel it's important to ensure that we have the EPA doing its job, which is to ensure that we have clean air, clean water.
Last year, she got $20 million for the Alaska Village Water Program, twice as much as the year before. Murkowski spoke shortly before the Post published its story. Several news outlets have reported more generally that the White House wants to cut the EPA budget by about 24%, while the Interior Department would face a 10% cut. Murkowski says she doesn't know if the reports are accurate.
We do, as appropriators, need to be prepared for a budget that on the discretionary side is probably going to look initially pretty aggressive.
But the president's budget isn't the final say. Congress ultimately decides how federal money is allocated. The Senate today also confirmed Ryan Zinke of Montana as Interior Secretary. Zinke's simultaneous support for keeping federal lands public and resource development on public lands has the environmental lobby unsure of what to make of him. Alaska's congressional delegation gives him high marks. Twenty-5 years ago, Rabbi Yosef Greenberg and his wife Esti moved from New York to Anchorage and founded the Lubavitch Jewish Center of Alaska. On Monday, the Lubavitch Jewish Center, along with more than 20 others across the nation, received bomb threat phone calls. Rabbi Greenberg says they have not experienced any trouble before this. The rabbi says the staff worked hard to keep the children calm.
And then the neighbors were very kind, and they opened up for us the entire two huge rooms in their building, and the kids felt very comfortable there. They really did not know what's going on.
Rabbi, there was 22 other Jewish centers that were also threatened on the same day. There were other threats made in January. Have the police said anything about how they're viewing this? Is it considered a coordinated attack? Have they said anything about that to you?
Well, the local police didn't really have an answer for me, and neither the local FBI. But what I contacted our representative in New York, who is in charge on all the Lubavitch centers around the world for security reasons, and he's in contact with the national FBI. And from him, I understood that this was definitely an organized something that all the centers got something similar. I think even the same phone call or similar phone calls. The only difference we heard that the other places there was a female voice, but also it was a male voice. But the content was pretty much the same, and the style was pretty much the same.
How are the children now? Are they asking a lot of questions, or are they having trouble sleeping after this?
No, but I have not heard anything, so I don't think so. I don't think there's any problems.
And how about you, Rabbi, and your staff and your wife, Esti? How are you feeling?
Definitely nerve-wracking. But definitely during those 20 minutes, it was scary because, you know, you don't know. I mean, actually, the message was even worse than I knew, because I did not know about the message. And the message was, they said there will be much destruction and bloodshed. So I didn't even know that that was said. Just the other day, the administrator who took the phone told me that that's what it was.
It was not just a call saying there's a bomb in the building, you have 20 minutes to get out. There was more than that.
Right. So I didn't even know about that. So I just heard that a few hours ago.
Rabbi Greenberg, you sent out a note thanking the community and the Anchorage police for the response and support that have come in. What has the community reaction been like since this threat happened?
Oh, it was really amazing. From the senators to faith leaders to the governor, the mayor, to average fellow Alaskans, friends, neighbors, members of the community, everyone was calling, or people walked in to bring flowers, and people sent donations. I mean, there was an outpour of love and kindness, and people were really upset about it and shocked that this is happening in Anchorage. I mean, we were all shocked that we are all of a sudden exposed and part of this whole thing. But I believe that there was someone who was trying to make a statement by calling, making phone calls to all states. Because I just heard that Hawaii also got the same threat. the Jewish Scholar Center in Hawaii. So it seems like they were trying to make a point that I'll be in every state.
How will you go forward now with the Lubavitch Jewish Center of Alaska and with the school? And what's the plan for the next days and weeks and months?
We definitely increase with security, but we do not want to, you know, put any fears in people's hearts. And it's not real to a certain degree. And it's more like just to create, that's what terrorism is, to create fear. And we are not going to bow down to fear. And we will continue with our routine and continue to create, to bring more a wave of love and goodness and kindness. And that will be the ultimate answer to this new wave of anti-Semitism.
Yosef Greenberg is the rabbi of the Lubavitch Jewish Center of Alaska. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, climatologists say we could see another El Nino late this year.
Generally in El Nino winters, Alaska is warmer than normal and maybe a little wetter than normal.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Lawmakers looking to tighten penalties for some felonies and thefts are weighing two factors. On one hand, they've heard from members of the public and law enforcement that last year's criminal justice overhaul went too far in letting offenders go without jail time. On the other, social science research that shaped the law points to evidence that sending many offenders to jail will actually increase the likelihood they'll commit more violations in the future. North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill describes the dilemma in using research to set sentencing ranges that will satisfy the public.
I don't know that we can actually get any data that will help us on this, unfortunately, because in looking at the data, they're saying the less jail time, the less recidivism, and our public is not going to be satisfied with that at this point.
The Senate Judiciary Committee discussed a bill that would revise last year's crime law. Until last year, those who committed Class C felonies could receive up to 2 years in jail. But the new law changed this. It allowed first-time offenders to receive probation. Now lawmakers want first-time offenders to serve some jail time, but there's differences over how long the sentencing range should be. Prosecutors want it to be up to 1 year. Department of Law Criminal Division Director John Skidmore says judges aren't able to use their discretion.
Courts have to have the discretion to look at a particular offense, to look at a particular offender, and decide, is this someone who shouldn't be in jail and we can put on probation, or is this someone who does need some jail time?
State Public Defender Quinlan Steiner argues the sentences for Class C felonies should be no more than 90 days. He says the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission recommended scaling back sentences based on evidence from other states that first-time offenders engage in crime after they're jailed.
The very act of putting people in jail put the public at risk, when if you didn't put them in jail, there'd be less risk.
The Senate Judiciary Committee also plans to weigh the cost of increasing jail times the legislature cut last year. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is trying to change the laws that govern how it uses its money. Some board members hope the legislation will pass soon enough that the organization does not have to undergo a special legislative audit. The trust was created to fund mental health programming around the state. It came under scrutiny last year because the Board of Trustees was investing the trust's principal on their own instead of having it managed by the permanent fund. Some say that violates state statutes. A legislative audit was ordered in December. Trust interim CEO Greg Jones says Anchorage Senator Anna McKinnon requested they submit legislation for consideration. Jones says the proposed laws would give the board and the trust land office the legal authority to do what they're already doing with the principal.
And for years we've done it, we've used it for a variety of things, stewardship of our land, increasing the value of our resources, diversifying our income, We believe those are all appropriate things for the trust to do, but they're not addressed in current statutes and current laws.
The current statute was crafted more than 20 years ago and states the principal shall be invested by the permanent fund corporation, not by the board of trustees. Jones says it's time for an update. He's working with lawyers and the attorney general's office to draft the new legislation. He says it will include limits on what the trust can invest in and will tie the expenditures to the mission of the trust, supporting mental health programs. During a special board meeting on Tuesday, some members of the board, including Vice Chair Mary Jane Michael, expressed frustration that the legislation wasn't ready to present yet. She says until new legislation is passed, the board can no longer invest in income-generating commercial real estate.
It's costing us ultimately millions of dollars. We're losing our connections to the outside investment world. It's impacting us.
She also said passing new legislation could make the legislative audit unnecessary.
There's nothing more important we could do right now than to get legislation going, because it will save us a lot of work in the long run if we don't have to have the audit and we don't have to do a lot of these other things, because we've dealt with what we need to deal with. So,
Jones reported to the board that the audit is scheduled to start in May and could take about a year to complete. The trust's advisory boards wrote letters last year supporting the completion of the audit because of concerns about the trust's, quote, lack of transparency and meaningful public process related to land management and property acquisition. Jones says the trust will also be undergoing an organizational review that could overhaul the organization's structure and bylaws. The Anchorage Assembly passed a measure that could have an impact on health care for anyone getting care in Alaska's largest city. The ordinance from the mayor's administration aims to make pricing more transparent. It requires that providers give a non-binding estimate for how much services cost, though it doesn't mandate that they report that data to government agencies. The cost estimates only have to be offered if a patient requests it. The measure passed 9-1 with only Assemblymember Amy Demboski of Eagle River opposed, saying the effort fails to take into account important parts of the medical billing process. The measure goes into effect in 60 days. The House Fisheries Committee held a hearing yesterday regarding a House joint resolution that opposes the FDA's approval of genetically engineered salmon. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
In November of 2015, the FDA approved Aqua Bounty Aqua Advantage genetically engineered salmon. It's the first genetically engineered animal that the FDA has okayed for human consumption. Anchorage Representative Garen Tarr, who has sponsored similar legislation in the past two legislative sessions, is the resolution's primary sponsor. She offered a statement at the hearing.
So what you get when you have the genetically modified fish is you have something that makes it grow bigger and faster. The genetically modified salmon, and if you look at the website for the company who's proposed this, this was never really about sustainability. This has always just been about profit. You know, we have to question, you know, the difference between what's, you know, healthy for an ecosystem versus what is an economic opportunity.
The resolution expresses concern that the long-term effects on human health of consuming genetically engineered salmon are unknown, and that if the modified salmon were to escape, they could threaten wild fish populations, including wild salmon. The committee amended the resolution. Originally, it would have urged Congress to enact legislation that requires prominent labeling of all genetically engineered products. They amended it to ask for the labeling of genetically engineered salmon and salmon products. The floor was open to public testimony, but no one testified, and the resolution was moved out of committee. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The weather phenomenon El Niño may be on its way back. That's after a weak La Niña system faded out a few months ago. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with climatologist Brian Bretschneider each week as part of the segment Ask a Climatologist. Bretschneider told Energy Desk editor Annie Feit computer models are hinting at the resurgence of El Niño in the second half of this year.
The models are right now are predicting a 50% chance of an El Niño by this fall, about a 40% chance of neutral conditions, and only a 10% chance of La Niña. So it's not a done deal, but for 6, 7, 8 months out, a 50% chance of El Niño is something to keep a very close eye on.
And so what causes El Niño?
Well, there's a lot of complicated interactions, but basically you have a warm pool of water that's semi-permanent in the western Pacific, and you have easterly trade winds that kind of push that water and keep it over there. Those easterly trade winds weaken in an El Niño event, and that warm water is able to kind of slosh back into the central and even eastern Pacific. And that really affects a lot of the global circulation pattern because it facilitates thunderstorm development and the movement of air up, creating low pressure, and then where that air has to settle back down, creating high pressure. So these large-scale wind and pressure patterns that drive much of the climate of the globe.
What does it mean for Alaska?
Well, in Alaska, typically the effects are much stronger in the winter. So if this sets up, sometime in the fall, we would expect the impacts to that to be felt next winter. And generally in El Niño winters, Alaska is warmer than normal and maybe a little wetter than normal. It's not a 100% that it happens every time, but more likely than not, that's the effect in Alaska.
The fact that we had a relatively long and strong El Niño and then a short, weak La Niña, and then looks like we're heading back to El Niño, how much of that is related to climate change?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, typically the recurrence interval between El Niños is about 2 to 7 years. More likely, 5 years is a more common. So to have El Niños 2 years apart isn't unheard of. But there has been some research that shows that in a warming world, that El Niños and super El Niños will become more common, and the impacts of that would be felt more acutely, particularly in places like Alaska.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. Public education plays a pivotal role in the lives of special needs students throughout the state. And as Alaska Public Media's Josh Edge reports, a lot of their success is determined by confidence.
Kelsey McCarthy Keeler is a student at Service High School in Anchorage.
And what grade are you in?
I'm senior.
A senior?
Yeah.
Kelsey has Down syndrome and is a part of the school's special education and life skills program. And she's a bit of a music enthusiast. Kelsey has played the cello since elementary school, and she loves to sing. Her mom, Molly McCarthy, says Kelsey even sang at Service's homecoming assembly during her junior year.
Did you get up all by yourself with a microphone and sing the national anthem?
Yeah, I did by myself. Yeah.
Was it scary?
Sometimes.
It wasn't just scary for Kelsey, though. Molly says she was nervous, too, at first.
There was thunderous applause after she did that. And many people came up afterwards and told her how brave she was.
Adam Mahonan, also known as Mr. A, is a special education and life skills teacher at Service High School. He says it was a proud moment, not just for Kelsey, but also for the rest of the school.
I don't think I've ever had a student more patriotic than Kelsey. She writes down the Star Spangled Banner and does a Pledge of Allegiance and wears an American baseball cap. She loves it. And so for her, it was such a cool moment. And for the school to be so accepting of it, it was really, really neat to see.
Anyway.
That culture of acceptance and inclusion is something Mr. A and many others say they have worked hard to cultivate at Service. The school started a peer teacher program that brings general education students into special education classes to help out.
They're a senior and they're a leader, and you have freshmen come up through that same program and they see a kid that they look up to that's involved in the special needs program. It really sets the tone and the precedent that, you know, here at Service High School specifically, that that's how you treat people.
There's room for 72 peer teachers in the classroom each day. Service students fill those spots and then some.
I mean, what a great problem to have is that, you know, there's too many kids willing to come in and help out in a special needs room.
Molly McCarthy says the work of the students at Service has played a crucial role in Kelsey's growth.
They see this unique individual who has all of their strengths and foibles and personality quirks. They see this whole person first and not their disability. And they're going to carry that with them. And that can only benefit our community at large.
Molly says her daughter has become much more independent and confident during her 4 years at Service. When she's not singing in front of hundreds, Kelsey is learning to ride horses. She's worked at Blockbuster, and she's even jumped into Anchorage's Goose Lake for the Polar Plunge. Molly says she's excited for Kelsey's graduation at the end of this school year, but she's also nervous about what comes next.
There are a lot of questions about down the road. You know, what is her life going to look like? Where is she going to live? How independent can she be? What kind of job is she going to have?
After graduation, Molly says Kelsey will stay with the Anchorage School District a little longer through its ACE Act program, which gives adult students between the ages of 18 and 21 additional support as they transition out of high school.
That will really continue to, foster this readiness to be out there and to find, you know, hopefully meaningful work for her. Oh, and a meaningful life.
Before she's done with this school year, though, Kelsey says there's one more thing she wants to do: play the cello for her class. She still has a couple months to make it happen. Service High School graduates receive their diplomas May 15th. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Avery Lill in Dillingham, and Zachariah Hughes, Ann Hillman, Josh Edge, and Annie Fite in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
The Northwest Arctic Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Kotzebue March 1st and 2nd at the Northwest Arctic Heritage Center from 9 to 5 to develop proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and discuss other issues related to subsistence. The public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all the information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.